Okay, so we have this wrong concept of me, that this ignorant concept of me. We get attached to that me, that I, that self. And then we get attached to everything that seems to give that I pleasure. Okay? So whatever gives me pleasure, you know, my coffee in the morning, my bihun in the morning, yeah, my air conditioner, my car, you know, my boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife or children or parents, you know, everything that seems to give us happiness we get very attached to, including money. That's what really gives us happiness, isn't it? Yeah? That, you know, we often feel, what's the purpose of my life? Make money. Yeah? If I have money, oh, sure guarantee to be happy. Are you sure? Are you sure? Think about it. Yeah? Does more money really make you happy? Let me digress for a minute and tell you a story. I was asked, how long ago was it? Maybe 2.5 years ago? Bill Gates' best friend was dying. I live in Seattle. Bill Gates lives in Seattle. That's why everybody knows where Seattle is. Okay, not because I live there, even though I'm so important. But because he lives there. Anyway, his best friend was dying. It was really a tragic situation. He was a young man in his 30s, very wonderful wife and kids and the whole thing. And Bill Gates was very kind to his friend, loaned him his personal jet so he can go and get the best medical treatment in America. You know, the doctors couldn't save him. Anyway, the man died, and I was asked to come before he died and counsel him, and he wanted to write his own memorial service. So we went through and prepared his memorial service, and then I was the one that conducted the memorial service, which was held at Bill Gates' house. So aren't I important? Okay. But, you know, to go to Bill Gates' house because someone died, you'd much rather go on a different occasion. But we had the memorial service. It was really quite a beautiful service. And after that, I went home and I took a walk in the park. And when I was walking in the park, you know, and just thinking about the service and what had happened, I realized how much freedom I had to walk in the park, and that Bill Gates and his family couldn't take a walk in the park. You know, when you're really rich like that, you can't go to the supermarket. You can't put your kids, he has 2 young kids, you can't put your kids in a baby stroller and take your kids for a walk. You know, when you're rich, you're very, very confined. You're kind of in a prison of wealth, don't you think? And I began at that moment, like I said, to really feel that I'm much more fortunate than Bill Gates was, because nobody knows me. I can take a walk in the park, you know? I mean, aside from the fact that I don't have kids, thank goodness. But, you know, if I had kids, I wouldn't have to worry about anybody kidnapping my kids and holding them for ransom. If you're Bill Gates, you worry about somebody kidnapping your kids and holding them for ransom, don't you? Okay? So what I'm getting at is we think that money is going to make us happy and that money is the meaning of our life. But I think sometimes money brings a whole different set of problems. Yeah? So they always say, be careful what you want because you might get it. Yeah? So we always say, if I only well, be careful, because if you only have more money, maybe you couldn't take a walk in the park. And you'd be more afraid of what happened to your kids. Yeah? So it's good to be satisfied with who we are and what we have. In any case, let's return to what I was talking about. I go off on these different tangents here and there. Okay, our mind gets attached to everything that we think is going to bring us happiness. So we start grasping at everything. I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. Give me everything I can have, you know, that's going to make me happy. And we're sometimes willing to harm other people in order to get the things that we think are going to make us happy. You know, this starts from the time we're little kids on the playground and we snatch somebody else's ball. We think the ball is going to make us happy, so we take it from our playmate. We don't care if they're miserable. Okay? Well, when we're adults, we continue to do this, only we cover it up a lot. Yeah? It's called cheating in our business. Isn't it? Or borrowing things from our friends but forgetting to return them. Or kind of schmoozing up to somebody and flattering them so that they'll give us something that we like. Oh, your watch is so nice. Where did you get that beautiful wristwatch? It's so nice. Hint, hint, hint. Okay. Yeah, whatever it is. So, you know, we're always trying to get something for ourselves. Yeah? And like I said, very often we're not so nice to other people. We take away their boyfriends, we take away their girlfriends, you know. We never take away their garbage. So not only are we attached to the things that we think will make us happy, we also get upset and angry when we're denied the things that are going to make us happy. And when instead of getting what we want, we get what we don't want. Okay? So we find in our life very often there's a lot of unhappiness and anger and upset. You know, instead of praising me, somebody criticized me. Instead of promoting me, they laid me off. You know? Instead of, you know, giving me a raise, they forgot. Instead of taking me out to the movies, we stayed home. Yeah. Instead of giving me beautiful food, I got leftovers. Yeah. So we get angry, we get upset. Yeah. Okay, so what we do when we're attached to things, craving everything for ourselves, when we get angry because we're not getting what we want, or we're getting what we don't want, then all these thoughts, the words, the actions that we do, this is all what's called karma, action. What we say, think, feel, and do. Yeah? This karma leaves imprints on our mind stream. Kind of like a trace of energy. Yeah? We also sometimes create good karma, you know, when we're generous, when we're kind, the times when we do take out other people's garbage. Of course, weigh that against the time when we leave the garbage for them to take out. You know, but we do create positive karma too through acts of kindness and generosity, when we're patient, when we're compassionate, when we help people. Even when we've refrained from harming them, we're creating good karma. Okay? So we're going through our life wanting to be happy, wanting to avoid suffering, and that's all dependent on this wrong concept of me and this overemphasis on the importance of the self. And so as a result, we create all this karma, okay? The karma of attachment, of anger, of jealousy. Other people have more than I do. Other people have what I want, okay? We create the karma of arrogance. Look at me, look what I've attained, I'm so great. Okay? So all these, the imprints of all these actions remain on our mind stream. Remember, our mind stream isn't form. You know, there's no form, no atoms and molecules to it. But it's like these traces of energy, you know, these what karmic imprints. Just remain and go along aside our mind stream. These karmic imprints influence what we experience. So it's like, I'm going to use an analogy that's physical, but you know, remember, we're talking about something that's not physical. It's as if our mind were a field, and when we create karma, we're planting seeds in the field. Sometimes we plant rose seeds, flower seeds. Sometimes we plant the seeds for weeds, okay? Chili peppers. Ugh. Yeah. We plant all different sorts of seeds. Now, different conditions come along in our life, and the conditions that come along water and fertilize and make sprout the different seeds in our mind stream. Okay? So it's just like how seeds need water and fertilizer and something to grow. Also, these karmic seeds in our mind stream. You know, when we meet different conditions in our life, they'll grow. Yeah? Not all of them grow at the same time, but different ones grow when the conditions for them grow come together. So by different seeds ripening at different times, then we experience different things. Yeah? When we come to the end of our life, some seed that's very powerful, or a group of seeds that's very powerful, the conditions come together for that to ripen, and as that ripens, that, you know, influences what rebirth we're going to take. You know? So if we ask, why was I born who I am? Well, the answer is due to my actions in the past. Due to the actions that left these karmic seeds on my mind stream, and some of those karmic seeds ripened at the time of death in my previous life and made my mind interested in taking the rebirth that I have now. Okay? So we didn't actually choose our rebirth. Yeah. Some people get this very kind of rigid idea of karma and say we chose our rebirth. You know, that gives you the idea that somehow we're sitting there saying, you know, we died from one life and we're hanging out there in the intermediate stage saying, I'm interviewing for mothers and fathers, you know, apply now and I'll choose the best one. You know, it's not like that. Okay, we're not sitting up there taking job applications for who's going to be our parents. Yeah, but rather, just because of the different seeds that ripen, our mind becomes interested or attracted to a certain environment, to a certain family. Okay, we get born in that family. Yeah? So our karma influences where we get born. You know, whether we get born as a human being or even as an animal or some other kind of life form. Our karma influences what we experience after we've been born also. Yeah? Whether we have good health or whether we have poor health. You know? Whether people like us or don't like us. Whether we're rich or we're poor or somewhere in between. Okay? So all of this is influenced by our previous actions. Our previous actions also influence the kind of personality that we have. Because, for example, in a previous life, let's say we met the Dharma, we practiced the Dharma, we tried to subdue our anger in a previous life. Well, then this lifetime, we're going to be much more even-tempered. We're not going to be so irascible. If in a previous life we didn't do any work on our anger, and maybe we created a lot of anger, then this lifetime it's going to be very easy to get angry. Okay? I think about sometimes, like the world situation that we're in now, after the September 11th event, and I think, you know, why did all of this happen? Or why, you know, how did people become terrorists? Did you ever wonder that? You know, I mean, people start out as these little babies. Osama bin Laden was a little baby. I mean, he didn't come out of the womb as a terrorist, you know. He came out of the womb as a little baby. How did this little baby grow up to be a terrorist? You know, how did this little baby grow up to distort his own religion? Yeah. And I think deceive people, telling them that killing them sends them to heaven. I don't think religion really teaches that. I think, you know, it's a complete distortion of Islam to say what he's saying. But how come from this little baby grew up to be somebody like that? Did you ever wonder that? You know? I mean, his mother must wonder that. Can you imagine being his mother? Oh my goodness. I mean, his family has disowned him, but I mean, imagine that. I mean, a lot of you are parents. When you look at your baby, you know, you don't think your baby's going to grow up to murder a few thousand people, do you? Yeah? Well, how come that baby developed such wrong views? How come that baby developed so much hatred? Yeah. How come that baby was able to become such a powerful figure? Okay. Well, there's many causes and conditions that came together. Some, not all, but some of the causes and conditions come from his previous life. You know, I would suspect having generated a lot of wrong views in a previous life. Or maybe having some kind of familiarization with killing people in a previous life. It was a habit, you know, or some familiarization with hatred in a previous life. So that just kind of, you know, there's that energy of repeated action that kind of conditions or pushes the mind to go in a certain direction now. Yeah?